Hi, my name's Professor Paul Baines. I'm Professor of Political Marketing at the University of Leicester and co-author of Marketing 5th Edition by Oxford University Press with Chris Phil, Sarah Rosengren and Paolo Antonetti. This is the podcast for Chapter 16, Business to Business Marketing. In this chapter, we'll explain the main characteristics of business markets and help you understand the different types of organisational customer. We'll describe the different types of offering that are bought and sold in business markets. We'll set out the main processes and stages associated with organisational buying and purchasing. We'll explain what business-to-business marketing is and the marketing issues associated with professional services firms as a unique aspect of business-to-business marketing. We'll help you understand the principles of key account management. Let's jump first to business markets. What's the difference? Well, what is business-to-business marketing first? And I think just to imagine the complexity of business marketing, just think about a car manufacturer. To make a car, a manufacturer tries to create value by buying a range of finished and part-finished items, assembling them and distributing the completed cars to dealers who then sell them on to consumers or businesses, so-called fleet buyers. And the array of parts and finished items that the manufacturer buys involves a large number of suppliers. And this is how the business market operates. The action undertaken by a supplier or of a brake system, for example, to influence the car manufacturer to select that system constitutes business-to-business marketing. So that's what business-to-business marketing is. But let's tell you a bit more about the nature of business-to-business marketing. The nature of demand is different, for example. The key characteristics of business markets are that the nature of demand is different because it's derived demand. In other words, demand is really set at the level below, which is at the consumer level. You know, business-to-business organisations might sell cars, but the real demand is at the is with the end consumer. The buying processes are slightly different. We'll talk about that in a bit more detail. There's often an international component to business-to-business sales. And, of course, there's an important interaction between the buyer and seller. That relationship is different from a typical customer's relationship with, say, a retailer, for example. Let's start with buying processes. The key thing is that business-to-business buying really is different because the decision-making unit, as it's known in a business, doing the buying, is different from a single individual buying a chocolate bar, for example. Not only is the group of people buying different, but also the types of purchases. These are referred to as buy classes. And they're also buy phases. And we'll explain these in a bit more detail. So there are different types of organizational customer. There's a commercial customer, which might be distributors, original equipment manufacturers. That's when one company relabels a product and incorporates it within a different product to sell it under the company's own brand, for example, offering its own warranty, support, and licensing. Users, organizations that purchase goods and services, which are then consumed as part of their production or manufacturing processes. And retailers, they're all commercial organizations, commercial buyers. Government also is a organisation that buys a lot of goods and services, and of course institutions such as not-for-profit organisations, churches, charities, community-based organisations, housing associations, and so on. We can also classify business goods into three types of as input goods, equipment goods and supply goods. Input goods are raw materials, semi-manufactured parts and finished goods. Equipment goods are sometimes known as capital or investment goods. And there are supply goods, otherwise known as maintenance, repair and operating materials. So input goods have been subjected to different levels of processing, and so they lose their individual identities and become part of the finished item. Equipment goods are necessary for manufacturing operations to take place. Land, buildings, computer systems, machine tools are all part of the production process. And supply goods are goods and services which are consumables because they are necessary to keep production processes in the organisation running. Lubricants, paints, screws, cleaning materials, etc. If we think about decision-making units, the decision-making units often constitute a variety of different people. That might include initiators, influencers, deciders, gatekeepers, users, and of course, decision makers. Initiators start the whole process off. Influencers might have some, as it says, some influence over the process, often help to establish the technical specifications for a particular purchase and so on. Deciders are so often known as KDMs, key decision makers, those who make the actual make the purchase decision, but they may not necessarily have formal authority, but they do actually make the decision. Buyers are usually purchasing managers, and they select the suppliers and manage the process of buying. Gatekeepers are people such as personal assistants, who are secretaries, technical personnel, switchboard operators, all who have some kind of influence over the eventual decision and whether you can get through to the decision makers in the purchasing process. Influencers we've mentioned, So those are the different types of members of the decision-making unit: initiators, influencers, deciders, gatekeepers, users, and decision-makers. And you can see that that's very different from, say, one person going into a shop to buy a loaf of bread. Or possibly, I mean, you have a similar thing in consumer marketing in some respects, in the sense that the household unit might be a decision, it is often a decision-making unit. If mum and dad go to the supermarket with their son, then, you know, all three of them have some kind of influence over who buys what, you know, what is bought. But it's very, very different from the kind of professional operation that a business firm operates. And there are also different buy classes which describe the process of buying. You've got a new buy, a modified buy, and a rebuy. So new buy, modified rebuy, and rebuy. With a new buy, you're buying something completely new. So a great deal of information is required in the buying process, and alternative solutions are unknown. All are considered new. With a modified rebuy, the requirement's not new, but is slightly different from previous situations. So a little more information is required, but the process is usually quicker. With a rebuy, alternative solutions are not sought or required. So there's limited or no information. New information required. So the problem is identical to the previous experience, and that's a beautiful situation to get in if you're a firm, because really it means that the company that you're selling to are very likely to reuse you if you did a good job. So the buy phases are similar to the consumer situation. You know, we talk with the consumer product acquisition process. How does a firm go about buying its products? And it tends to go through a similar sort of process. There's a need problem recognition phase, a product specification phase, a supplier and proposition search phase, evaluation of proposals, and a supplier selection, and then an evaluation process. And that's I think pretty similar to what consumers would go through in many ways. We also talk about buy grids, which mix the buy phases with the buy classes. Is it a new task, a modified rebuy, or a straight rebuy? And how do each of these buy phases relate to buy classes? And that's called the buy grid framework. It's kind of an overlapping of the two so that we can see what we need to do. You can see that in more detail on page 629. Okay, so that's the key principles of business-to-business marketing, that the nature of the buying situation is different. But one important element is the relationship between the buyer and the seller. And in order to determine which, because we as a company, we can't deal with everybody in, you know, we can't have a very strong relationship with all our customers. We just don't have the resource to do that. We have insufficient numbers of salespeople. We have to use our resources carefully. And to do that, we tend to use a customer portfolio matrix, which classifies customers into relationship strength, high and low, and their attractiveness. That's not physical attractiveness, obviously. It's attractiveness as a customer. How much profit? What's the profit potential, for example? Again, low and high. So if you look at that, then you'd have four sectors of customers. Sector A would be high relationship strength, high customer attractiveness. then must have customers, and you'd invest resources to keep those. Sector B is high customer attractiveness but low relationship strength. In other words, you're not really looking after them as much as you should do. They're good to have customers, so it's, you would allocate your resources selectively there. In sector C, your relationship strength is high but the customer attractiveness is low. And you're probably looking after those a little bit too much, but there's still need to have customers in order to pay off your fixed costs. And sector D, which is low relationship strength, low customer attractiveness, you don't need those customers. And if you're looking after lots of those, then you should start to divest of them and put them onto another company. And that's quite a revolutionary thing to say. You know, losing customers is not something that many companies really think about. But if they're costing you more than they're bringing in, and there's no long-term potential, that's absolutely what you should be doing. Professional services marketing, of course, is quite a unique area of business-to-business marketing, in the sense that they can be distinguished as an independent type of organisation and provide services to all other organisations, can be found in many sectors. For example, in engineering, architecture, IT and software, management consultancy, financial services and so on. And they offer extremely complex and customised services that are created and delivered by highly qualified personnel. So, in a sense, they're really quite different from other business-to-business organisations. And some of the elements of services marketing relate to this group of people. So they kind of mix business-to-business marketing and services marketing. So PSFs really need to have a compelling brand value proposition or promise, the use of internal and external communications to in turn inform and influence stakeholders, particularly clients, and they need to ensure the customer's experience of the brand is a strong one and that there's a realisation of the brand promise. With key account management, which is that extension of once you've selected the customers you need to have a relationship with, then you designate a certain number of them as key accounts, and that means that you strengthen your relationship with the most important customers. And to do that, you would tend to develop key account plans for those particular companies, which really means evaluating the strategic environment in which they operate and then trying to work with them in order to help them achieve their corporate mission. So we can think of a variety of different aspects that we need to take into account for key accounts, but we would tend to look at the key account management cycle, which goes through different stages, really. So a key account might go, you would start off in the exploratory phase, move to the basic phase, become more cooperative, start to become interdependent, then integrated, and then the relationship falls apart and disintegrates. Those are the kinds of stages that a key account would go through. In the exploratory phase, suppliers identify and isolate those customer accounts that have key account potential. In the basic phase, it's kind of transactional. Exchanges are used by both parties to test each other. Then it becomes more cooperative. Parties become involved in the relationship much more, an increasing number of people become involved. It's not just one person in each organization. Interdependent stage, it's mutual recognition of each other's importance. Very often single supplier status is conferred at this point. When it's integrated, both parties share sensitive information, undertake joint problem solving. The relationship is regarded as a single entity. And then of course when it disintegrates, the termination or readjustment of the relationship occurs at that particular time. Okay, so that's an overview of business-to-business marketing. Hopefully, that's given you a clear understanding of how it's different from standard marketing.